We're hearing a track by the Klezmatics from their album Rhythm and Jews, and the clarinetist is David Krakauer. We're told back in 1979, well before he began playing klezmer music, and while he was still steeped in classical and jazz, clarinetist David Krakauer first heard the great klezmer clarinetist Dave Tarras in concert. He remembers one note in particular that Tarras played that sent shivers up his spine. That's what I love about music, one note that gives people a good feeling, Krakauer once told an interviewer. It is the mystery of that one note that contains klezmer's secret. Perhaps it is a remnant of the music's mystical roots in the Hasidic nigunim, the wordless prayer melodies used to induce states of transcendent consciousness. Perhaps it is the ornamentation adopted from the chazonis, the shaping and bending of notes, giving them a vocal inflection that speaks of its Yiddish and cantorial roots. That connection between instrumental and vocal music, the human voice as heard through the violin or clarinet, cannot be underestimated, and it is undoubtedly in part what people respond to, what gives the music such warmth, what makes the music sing, laugh, and cry, sometimes all three simultaneously. The emotional spirit of the soloist is the identifying characteristic of klezmer at its best, and it is this aspect to which contemporary audiences and musicians are most responsive. In the face of so much historical adversity and oppression, klezmer remains the raw sound of the human spirit, laughing, crying, and singing, all three impossibly at the same time. That from the volume The Essential Klezmer by Seth Rogovoy, centering on the clarinetist David Krakauer. This is David Krakauer, featured in a recording with the Kronos Quartet of the noted work by composer Osvaldo Golijov, Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind. Golijov tells an interviewer that the impulse for the work came from a memory of his great-grandfather, Abraham, who shared the composer's bedroom when Golijov was 7 or 8. Abraham moved in one day after one of his sons, Isaac, fell ill and eventually died. Golijov frequently recalled waking up to see Abraham praying by the window in the early morning light, the sight of a man who had lost 3 children, still maintaining a daily ritual of prayer, and then going out into the world to repair, repair things, fixing things with pockets full of screws. That memory led Kolyhov to ask, how does a person still pray after losing a child? And so Kolyhov links this memory to the Jewish concept of tikkun olam, repairing the world, which serves as a thematic backbone for this piece's spiritual persistence. The Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic will present two programs highlighting the rich history and expression of klezmer music and Jewish culture. A lecture discussion on klezmer and Kabbalah this Wednesday, February 4th, at 7 in the evening at Temple Hesed in Scranton, and an intimate chamber music program, Dreams and Klezmer, that's the title, and that's Sunday, February 22nd at 3 in the afternoon here at the WVIA Sordoni Theater in Pittston. The Dreams and Klezmer chamber concert on February 22nd weaves together the expressive fire of klezmer music with mystical and dreamlike modern works, exploring themes of memory, spirituality, and cultural tradition through a soundscape of Jewish mysticism, folk tradition, and dance. This evocative program for clarinet and string quartet features Osvaldo Golihoff's Powerful Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind, music by Dmitri Shostakovich, and traditional klezmer melodies arranged by Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic violinist and chamber series coordinator Sasha Margolis. The free klezmer and Kabbalah lecture discussion on February 4th will be jointly led by Sasha Margolis and Rabbi Daniel Swartz, spiritual leader of Temple Hesed, exploring interwoven threads of Jewish music and mysticism. Margolis will discuss the colorful history of klezmer music, touching on the influence of elaborate weddings, Russian plays, Yiddish, proverbs, and much more. Meanwhile, Rabbi Swartz will explore Jewish mysticism, the Kabbalah, and the mysteries of the Sefirot, emanations of the divine. We had a chance to speak by phone with the two presenters, and we begin with Sasha Margolis and his ties to klezmer.
When I was a kid was the era when klezmer music, which had been sort of moribund for a few decades, it had sort of gotten turned into a caricature of itself. And wasn't really part of a living tradition anymore for the middle of the 20th century, let's say. There was what's called the Klezmer Revival, and some great groups like the Klezmorum out of California and the Klezmer Conservatory Band out of Boston started releasing albums that were really fresh and exciting. And my dad got really excited about this. And so he bought an accordion, and he wrote some arrangements for my sister and for me to play. And we had a great time doing that and eventually started learning to improvise and really get into learning a lot of great klezmer tunes.
And in the meantime, you were pursuing your studies to play, whether it be in chamber settings or in orchestras and things like that. But there was a little gap.
Yeah, there was a long time when I didn't do a whole lot of klezmer. I continued to do some improvised music, but it was about 15 years ago that playing in the opera pit at the Glimmerglass Festival, I discovered that the clarinet player there was a wonderful klezmer player, and we started playing, and I have been really into it again ever since, and studied a lot about the history. And as you know, because we talked about this on another interview, klezmer played a major role in the novel that I wrote, The Symbolist.
And what's interesting in this connection, Sasha, is that we might think, for example, if we're reading your novel, which is wonderful, and it does play, and I love that scene that you actually read for us about the dance and singing and so forth and the weddings. Just tell us a little bit about the cultural way in Europe, in Central Europe, klezmer functioned in the society.
Yeah, well, klezmer functioned in kind of two different ways, and I will be discussing this in more detail at our lecture that we're going to be doing. But klezmer was an indispensable part of weddings. There are a couple of Yiddish proverbs that very much illustrate this. One is, a chasana on klezmorim is via levaya on trean, which means a wedding without klezmers. Klezmers were the players. A wedding without klezmers is like a funeral without tears. And then another expression is, ahut on a feda is via chasana on klezmorim, which means a hat without a feather is like a wedding without a klezmer. So weddings were sort of a major focal point of the culture in Yiddish-speaking Europe. And klezmorim were an indispensable part of that. So klezmorim were a big part of life among the Jews, of the traditionally observant Jews of Europe. And then also klezmorim played for non-Jewish customers. They were kind of the local music band for a lot of functions among Russian nobles, for example.
In thinking about it, we might say, well, in those different contexts, in dancing and in the kind of glue, social glue in various ways, entertainment, dancing, those are kinds of earthy activities that people engage in and have wonderful times and maybe some tears at the wedding, but they have to have the music in that way. But we're going to hear more about klezmer music and the focal piece of the concert that will be coming up in a way that goes off into perhaps spiritual and mystical dimensions. How do we reconcile that, or am I wrong about the earthiness?
Oh, no, you're not wrong at all. You know, dancing was a big part, although not the only part, of what klezmorim provided at those weddings, which were not just you show up for an hour and then there's a ceremony and then there's a little party afterward. But the weddings were multi-day affairs, but they especially had a lot of dancing. And in the Golikov piece that we're going to be doing on our concert, Golikov makes a lot of use of a particular klezmer tune, which is variously known as the Old Klezmer Band or the Odessa Bulgar. And it is so earthy. It's really earthy. But yeah, there is also, I'll tell you, I want to share a quote from Golikov when talking about the mystical aspect. So Golikov said, quote, I'm trying to invent, or maybe not invent, but discover what I call a galactic folklore. To give you an idea, the other day I was listening to Ligeti's violin concerto, and especially in its slow movement, there's a weird convergence of the already known and the entirely new. It could have been written 3 million years ago or 3 million years from now. In the same way, I am struck by the vividness of a lot of ethnic musics. My hope is not to imitate them, but to find their essential qualities. In this piece, I did not want to create a postcard of klezmer. I wanted to create an x-ray. And of course, with two such strong traditions, klezmer and the string quartet, I wanted to see if I could create a new world. And that's the quote. Yeah.
Have you played it, Sasha?
I have. The same group performed it last summer a couple of times. And it's such an incredibly powerful experience to play and, by all accounts, to listen to. It's a bit over a half hour long, and it takes you on such a journey. It's just extraordinary. And because it's inspired by this medieval Kabbalist named Isaac the Blind, the name of the piece is The Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind. Isaac the Blind was a French Kabbalist in the Middle Ages. And so, obviously, with the Kabbalah, you're really dealing with mysticism. And how he translates that into music is hard to say exactly, but it has a very mystical feeling at times.
And so when we hear the clarinet and we hear the strings, we might at first or at points, let's just say, we might get a sense that, oh, this is definitely rooted in klezmer, but because of the way he writes for the instruments and the way you all interact, it does transcend that. But it is still that?
Yeah, it's funny. So he wrote the piece originally for a klezmer clarinet player named Gyora Feidman, who was maybe the greatest of all the klezmer clarinetists, which says a lot. But there's a recording of Feidman playing this tune, the old klezmer band, or the Odessa Bulgar. There's unfortunately no recording of him playing the Golikov piece, but the Golikov treatment of that tune at times sounds exactly like that recording of Feidman playing with the klezmer band. I don't know how he does it. He's such a good composer. And we're playing these crazy chords that are kind of dissonant and complicated and unpredictable. And you would never, looking at the music on the page, guess that it was going to turn into an exact facsimile of what a klezmer band sounds like. But it does transcend it, too, because that's in the context of so much of what we talked about, mystical sounding music. It's just an amazing piece.
Are there movements that have titles or anything that gives you a sense of where you are and where we might read the program notes and say, oh, yes, okay.
Well, yes and no. They're not colorful titles, but he, in the score, has a fantastic program note where he talks about what each movement is. And I think we'll be reading that ahead of performing the piece because I think it's very helpful. One thing that's really interesting is that he decided, after having written the piece, not realizing it at the time, but he decided that the first movement is in the Aramaic language, the second movement is in Yiddish, and the third is in Hebrew. And he says, in the prelude, the music is like a celestial accordion rising and falling, like breathing, like praying, like air. And then the whole first movement is a heartbeat that accelerates wildly, becoming frantic. And then he talks about the second movement, opening with a hesitating, irregular pulse, a skipping heartbeat, the rhythm of death. The violin and the clarinet hold forth and monologue at the same time, like those Bashevis singer stories told in a poorhouse on a winter night. And then he says that the third movement, the string quartet is an accordion in the prelude, a klezmer band in the second movement. Now, in the third movement, it's a shepherd's magic flute. And there's a question woven into the hardening incense. That question is a little hard to explain without reading this whole program now, but it refers back to this Kabbalistic, intensely Jewish part of the piece. But he says, the question remains unanswered in the postlude. So I think he guides us to know what's going on over the course of the whole thing.
We spoke with Sasha Margolis, violinist with the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic and the orchestra's chamber music series coordinator. And we talked about the roots of klezmer music and the piece by Osvaldo Golijov, Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind, that will be featured in a concert here at the WVIA Sordoni Theater on February 22nd. Music from the third movement. In anticipation of that performance, Sasha will join with Rabbi Daniel Swartz of Temple Hesed in Scranton to present a talk and discussion titled Klezmer and Kabbalah this Wednesday at the temple. We caught up with Rabbi Swartz by phone, and he was eager to tell us more.
I've listened to it a few times now and read some of the composer's writings about it and a couple of analyses. It's a very intricate piece, and it certainly one can find a lot of mystical symbolism in there, whether or not all of that was consciously intended by the composer or not is an open question. And, you know, and also he himself had these experiences. So, you know, something can get into your work that's not on a conscious level and that you only realize afterwards.
Sasha and I have talked before, once before a concert in which klezmer music would figure, and then about his novel, The Symbolist, where the main character is a klezmer musician. And so I knew how he represented and how he understood and how he right. plays klezmer music. And I asked him, well, Sasha, what we know about klezmer at weddings and in villages and in homes and in dancing situations, it all sounds so earthy. But we're hearing here that Golioff brings klezmer together with something higher. So can you prepare us?
Sure, yes. So there's a couple of ways in along that. One is that the term that became klezmer was originally klezemer, instruments of music. And the thing to know is that both of those terms, kelim, instruments or vessels, and zemer, music, are terms that have overtones in ritual and religion. And so it's hard to have music that doesn't have some kind of connection, whether it's in consonance or in opposition to standard religious practice. The abstract quality of music, I think, lends itself to a variety of interpretations and understanding. And Jewish mysticism basically starts with the premise, which is, I think, is not so different from most forms of mysticism, that there's more to the world than meets the eye. And really, anything that posits that is in some level mystical. And that certainly describes a lot of how we react to music. So it's not negating the physical and the earthy, but it's saying, you know, at the same time, for example, that you've got a bride and a groom, and they're that individual bride and individual groom, and you're there being present to their joy and their family, they represent something greater. A couple that's in love, it has, in Jewish mysticism, been seen as an analogy for how the universe is supposed to be unfolding and what we're supposed to be doing in the universe. So that they hearken back to, you know, sort of the earliest stories of matriarchs and patriarchs, and they also speak of the possibility of redemption in a world that is very much now not feeling redeemed and feeling so broken and dissonant. So the presence of klezmer at those key life cycles, those are places where we intersect, where our sort of concrete physical life intersects with these symbolic levels of meaning. And a second connection that deals also with music's abstraction is that the very early mystics, and here clearly the Jewish mystics were influenced by the Pythagorean schools of thought coming out of the Hellenistic cultures, that were fascinated by the idea of numbers as an instrument of creation. And music obviously also is a different way into playing with numbers, whether you're talking about scales or progressions or rhythms, but also, you know, just the different resonating wavelengths of music. There have been plenty of folks who have put together ideas about math and music. And for the early mystics, they would have said, you know, basically, aha, See, these are both abstract ways of thinking about the idea of the creation of the world and of the creative process more generally. And there are evocations in the Golijov work of the shofar, of the ram's horn from the High Holidays, of melodies from the High Holidays. And one of the particular melodies that is sort of referenced is the melody to a very ancient prayer by Rabbi Akiva, traditionally is regarded as the composer of this prayer. And he was one of the people that is identified as one of the very early generations of mystics. So, you know, he's evoking this idea of the power and the mystery of the new year in his pieces very, very, very clearly. And one could, I think, very reasonably argue that part of what he's trying to get across with some of the places where there is resolution musically and where there isn't is just the mystery of life and how the mystics were always trying to search for answers to the puzzle of life. And I think as moderns, we're very tuned into that search, but we're also, I think, more willing to say at the end that the question is much more powerful than any of the answers that we come to.
And when you mention the bride and the groom and how that could be an analogy or something that we should be aspiring to as the universe is unfolding, can we carry that thought over to a group of musicians who are playing with each other and they may not be romantically in love, but they are playing together as if they were a community or friends, and that could be the agape kind of love?
Absolutely. You know, I remember the very first time I saw chamber music performed, and it was the Mendelssohn Octet, and, you know, was able to sit up fairly close and to see the musicians, even though they were all playing string instruments, breathing together, and how little gestures united them, how a melody would start over here and then bounce to this instrument and then bounce to that instrument and then unfold in a different way. And to make it work so clearly took an intense level of trust and communication. And that is sort of one kind of love language.
Rabbi Daniel, when I was speaking with Sasha, he said that Golijov talks about asking a question that isn't answered, and that's just how you put it. We know that Aaron Copland wrote The Unanswered Question. When we are, as an audience, drawn in and drawn along into a piece that doesn't resolve in that way, how does that help us be more in touch with who we are as humans and each other?
So this is where I think, you know, in some ways, modern religious thought can take us places that earlier in the traditions that have given rise to what is religious thought today might not have been able to go, or at least we don't know how they were able to sustain the idea of questions. So, you know, what we have in religious texts very often is attempts at answers. And I think part of living in the world today is understanding that people who are really 100% sure that they know the answer to everything are more often dangerous than inspiring. That the humility that we need and the complications of the world and the diversity of the world today requires us to question how close we're getting to an answer and to be able to hold the importance of a question without saying, and I know the answer and I'm right and you're wrong. And music is one of the beautiful ways to do that, in part because even when you have chords perfectly resolved, it's like, well, what did that mean? And there's not a right answer. And when we have things like the unanswered question or the Golijov piece where things are not resolved, it's like, oh, there's part of you that really wants to add one more note and have it all resolved and have it all neat. And then it also reminds us, oh, you know, that's actually not how life works most of the time. There's not neat endings to things. We transition from one chapter to the next. And if we're open to that, that very state of liminality, of being between things, is an incredibly sacred place. It leaves us vulnerable to the direction of the world at that moment, and it makes us tune into, okay, I don't have the answer, but what is needed of me in this moment? And that's certainly something that Jewish mysticism has always focused on. The idea that even though the world is complicated and huge, and that we should never despair that what we do makes a difference, that we won't solve things in a grand scale immediately, but that what we do to bring harmony, to bring listening to each other to bear, to bring healing, even when we can't see it, has this way that it resonates out into the universe. And I think that's one of the beautiful things of Jewish mysticism, and it's one of the very powerful things of music, is sort of understanding the power of a note to continue in your memory after it's done being played and heard, and how that memory empowers us to take the next step, even if we don't know what exactly is the place that we're going to. And music doesn't work unless there's spaces. You know, I've read the quote attributed to several different great pianists, Arthur Schnabel and Arthur Rubinstein, and who knows, you know, who said it or if anybody said it or what. But, you know, they were asked by somebody what makes them so great. And he says, well, you know, other pianists are as good as I am at the notes, but I excel at the rest. And just, what, you know, what exactly would that mean, to excel at the spaces in between the notes? You know, dance is here a very helpful thing for me, because when I was first learning different Israeli folk dances, I would always be tripping over myself and frustrated and looking at all these people around me who seemed to get it and to be so much more graceful. And what I needed to figure out at some point was that there's not constant motion. There's always spaces between movements. There's moments of stillness built into every part of the dance. And once I recognized that I didn't have to keep moving all the time, but to look for those spaces in between, then I was able to do the dance. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm as graceful as a lot of people, but it was like, oh yeah, just like in music. And in conversations and in life, when we leave open that space, when we are not constantly moving or constantly trying to fill up space with words, you know, those places in between are where we actually then connect.
Rabbi Daniel Swartz, spiritual leader of Temple Hesed in Scranton, speaking with us in anticipation of a program titled Klezmer and Kabbalah. He will present with Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic violinist Sasha Margolis this Wednesday, February 4th at 7 o'clock at Temple Hesed in Scranton. Admission is free. And the lecture discussion will prepare us for an intimate chamber music program titled Dreams and Klezmer on Sunday, February 22nd at 3 o'clock here at the WVIA Sordoni Theater in Pittston. Now, the conversation and the talk will explore interwoven threads of Jewish music and mysticism. Sasha Margolis will discuss the colorful history of klezmer music, touching upon the influence of elaborate weddings and Russian plays and Yiddish proverbs and more. And Rabbi Swartz will explore Jewish mysticism, the Kabbalah, and the mysteries of the Sefirot, the emanations of the divine. And we heard a foretaste of that in speaking first with Sasha Margolis and just now with Rabbi Swartz. The concert again is here on Sunday, February 22nd at 3 o'clock in the WVIA Sordoni Theater, WVIA's theater, and the station itself, located right between Wilkes-Barre and Scranton, just off Interstate 81 and the Pennsylvania Turnpike, about a mile from the exits from those roads. But if you'd like to attend the free lecture discussion, that is this Wednesday at 7 in the evening, and it's at Temple Hesed in Scranton. And that's One Knox Road. And if you'd like the details, nepaphil.org. So we have two things to remind you of. First, the lecture discussion, and that's this Wednesday at 7 at Temple Hesed in Scranton. And then on Sunday, February 22nd at 3 o'clock here at the WVIA Sordoni Theater in Pittston, it is that chamber music program titled Dreams and Klezmer that will feature Oswaldo Golihov's powerful Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind, music of Dmitri Shostakovich, and some traditional klezmer melodies arranged by Sasha Margolis. And so if you need information about each and the pair, it's nepaphil.org, nepaphil.org.